could hear the thundering of hooves around me and make out the faintest glimpses of the other horses. I heard Miles cry out and Zell scream to keep riding, and I heard more hooves behind us, closing in fast and the hard, guttural barking of Zatochi. They'd found us. Raz and his men, and they were hot on our heels. Muriel raced forward, rounding the valley's corner, nearly tripping. Something whistled right by my ear. An arrow. Liriana gasped. The world was a dark blur. I knew this was dangerous, that my horse could trip and fall, that I could fly off and break my neck. That'd probably be 100 times better than getting caught.
There!
Zell yelled from just ahead of me. He was pointing towards something in the cliff wall, wooden posts framing a dark opening, a mine shaft's narrow entrance. I had no idea why this would be good for us, but I didn't have time to think. Zell rode right up to it, effortlessly hopped off his horse, hit the ground with a roll, and ran in. I glanced to the side to see where Miles and Jax were, and then all at once, Muriel let out an agonized whinny and tripped, flying forward and hitting the ground on her side. The world spun. My body screamed. I flew off the saddle and slid hard across the stony dirt. I felt my sleeve tear and my skin underneath it scraping open along the ground. Liriana slid with me, too shocked to even scream, rolling like a hurled doll. A thick cloud of dust kicked up around us, but I could see my horse through the dust, flailing her legs. The shaft of an arrow jutted out of her flank, and our pursuers thundered toward us louder and louder.
"Come on!"
Jax yelled, and I felt his firm hands jerk me to my feet. He was off his horse, apparently, and so was Miles, who helped Liriana up in front of me. She was breathing, thank the old kings, and didn't look to have anything broken, but her eyes were glazed and distant, 1,000 miles away. In front of me, the dust cleared, and now I got my first good look at the men chasing us. 3 Zatochi mercenaries, astride dark stallions streaking down the valley. A scouting patrol. Raz wasn't with them, but that was a small comfort. The 2 men on the sides had axes out, and the one in the middle held a bow even as he rode, sliding another arrow into the string.
"Into the shaft! Go!"
Zell yelled.
"Muriel!"
Liriana cried, but Miles and Jax were on her and pulled her into the dark opening. They vanished instantly in the shadows, but Zell stayed just past the entrance, his sword unsheathed. I stopped by him. He whipped his shoulder to the side, and an arrow whistled by right where he'd been standing. Was he going to fight? Was this some doomed last stand sort of thing? Then Zell turned and slammed his sword into the wooden post holding up the shaft's entrance, like a lumberjack felling a tree. It cut through and stuck halfway. The post was rotten, crumbling. This mine must have been abandoned a long time ago. Up ahead, the mercenaries were almost upon us, and I could see the one in front slide both legs to one side of his horse, preparing to jump. Zell hacked at the post again, and it buckled, cracking in half. I helped as much as I could, giving it a few hard kicks. That was enough. The post split in the middle and fell over, blocking the entrance behind us and taking chunks of the rocky ceiling down with it. A blast of dust sprayed in my face. I coughed and gasped, even as Zell grabbed my arm and pulled me along.
"That bought us a minute, maybe 2, he said as we ran into the dark shaft. "We need to move."
We only made it a few steps in before rounding a corner and losing even the slightest hints of the sunlight peeking in from the outside. Total blackness enveloped us. The ground felt broken and uneven under my feet. Thick cobwebs clung to my face. I ran into one wall, then another. I could hear the others running, breathing, stumbling through the dark. "My sunstone!" I had a sudden moment of panic that I'd left it in my pack on the horse, but then I felt it in the pocket of my pants. I fumbled it out, my fingers confused for a moment by the engraved casing before I remembered it was the one Miles had given me. I flicked the little lever. The fire inside sparked to life, and then there was light all around us, bright and warm. I could see where we were now, a tight, claustrophobic shaft barely wide enough for 2 people shoulder to shoulder. Under our feet lay a track, the kind mine carts rolled on, but it was worn and broken. The walls were crumbling and forgotten. In front of me, the shaft stretched out into the distance, with no exit in sight. I could hear a commotion from behind us, men grunting as they shoved at the post and rocks blocking their path. Zell had been right. They'd be through in a minute.
"In here,"
he whispered from just up ahead, then disappeared seemingly into the wall. He'd found a passage, a narrow doorway leading to a side room. The four of us sprinted after him, pushing through the doorway single file. This room was wider than the shaft, at least a little. A circular stone chamber, maybe the size of my bedroom. It was empty, cold, with a hole carved in the middle of the floor encircled by stones, like a well, but draped in a shroud of yellowing cobwebs. Some broken mining equipment lay next to it. They must have raised the ore up through the hole from the lower floors. Mirjana collapsed, gasping against the back wall while the rest of us spread out.
"It's a dead end," Jax yelled. "We're trapped."
"It's not a dead end,"
Zell replied. In the hot white light of the sunstone, I could see that his face was slick with sweat. But he still somehow sounded calm, calmer than the rest of us, at least. He turned to the doorway, the glistening tip of his sword leveled at the darkness.
"It's where we make our stand."
"What?"
Miles panted.
"No. No, no, no. We can't. There's no way."
"If we run, they'll get us,"
Zell said.
"Here, we've got strength in numbers. We've got the element of surprise. And we've got a good room to fight in. This is our only chance."
My heart was thundering in my chest, and my arm hurt like hell. I was in terrible shape to fight, but Zell was right. We didn't have a choice. I looked across the room, and my eyes met his. They looked hard, strong, determined. They made me feel ready.
"Give me a knife,"
I said. He nodded and tossed me the dagger on his sheath, which I caught with my spare hand.
"I'll draw them in here. You get against the wall by the doorway."
Zell barked like a seasoned general. I listened.
"When they come in, stab them in the back."
He pulled the dagger out of his boot and threw it to Miles, who fumbled it, then picked it up off the ground.
"You, get on the other side of the doorway and do the same thing."
"I don't have a weapon,"
Jack said.
"You're built like an ox. Fight with your hands. And you, princess, use your magic to hurl them into that pit."
Lyriana looked up, as if snapping out of the trance she'd been in ever since our horse had gone down.
"I can't," she said. "I'm a sister of Kaya. I cannot use my magic to take a life."
"Are you out of your damn mind?"
Jax spun to her in disbelief.
"Those men are going to kill us. You need to fight."
"I took a sacred vow,"
Lyriana yelled back, and before the two could argue anymore, there was a loud crash from the entrance of the shaft, the sound of splintering wood and tumbling stone. The mercenaries were in. I twisted my sunstone to kill the flame, and we waited in the dark. I could feel my heart thundering, my breath fast and tense. The dagger trembled in my hands. I struggled to remember my training, the things Zell had taught me. But my mind was a blur. I was about to kill, or be killed. This was going to happen. I closed my eyes and strained my ears, trying desperately to hear any sign of the mercenaries. I could just barely make them out. Footsteps, padding softly toward us down the shaft. No sunstone for them. The mercenaries were coming in the dark, or with what little light was filtering through the reopened entrance. I tightened my grip on the dagger and steadied my hands, only to hear a sudden commotion. One of the mercenaries cried out. There was a thumping sound, like something heavy hitting the ground. A scream, then another, then a choked gasp. Feet scrambling, sizzling liquid splattering on stone, and a strange clicking, a sound I couldn't explain, like a dozen fingernails drumming on glass. Then there was only silence.
"What was that?"
Jax whispered.
"Shut up,"
Zell whispered back. I didn't like this. I mean, I hadn't liked waiting in the dark for them to walk in, but at least I'd known what was coming. Now I had no idea. I felt a sudden cold chill, a dry sweat. I had missed something, I realized. Something very important.
"Maybe they're messing with us,"
Miles chimed in.
"Or maybe they turned on each other. That sounded like a scuffle."
"I said shut up,"
Zell replied. But there was a hint of confusion in his voice. He didn't get it either. That worried me more than anything else. A dusty wind blew in from the well in the middle of the room. The air was musty, thick. But there was something else in it, too. A smell of rot. I shivered. This was bad. Very bad. Something was wrong here, something even worse than Zatochi mercenaries. What was this place? Who abandons a perfectly good mineshaft anyway? I backed up and my foot kicked something hard and round, the size of a ball. It rolled against the wall with a brittle scrape. I twisted my sunstone on for just the tiniest bit of light and found myself staring into the hollow eye sockets of a pockmarked human skull.
Killa!
Zell hissed.
Turn off that!
But he trailed off mid-phrase, as his eyes went wide with horror. As badly as I didn't want to, I followed his gaze toward the well at the center of the room. A sound was coming out of it. A skittering, clicking sound, like someone running their nails on a pane of glass. The cobwebs draped over the well shuddered and rose, not from the wind, but from something pushing up on them from below. Liriana let out a shriek and clasped a hand over her mouth. A single limb broke through the cobwebs first, a skinny, fleshy leg that looked just like a human finger, except it was a foot long, with five barbed knuckles and a sharp, dirty nail at the end. It hooked around the side of the well, its nail digging into the cracks between the stone, and tensed as the rest of its body pulled up through. Five more finger legs, clutching at the edges, and the flat, round head on top of them, like two fleshy dinner plates stacked together. It lifted up, maybe as tall as my knee, and stood over the well, its head rotating slowly as it scanned the room.
"What is that?" Zell asked.
"Scarling," I choked out, though technically it had many names. Skin spider, cave biter, miner's vein. Every child in the West grew up hearing stories about the clicking, venomous monstrosities that lurked deep in our caves and mountains. I'd never actually seen one before, of course. No one I knew had. Some people thought they were just a fairy tale, something adults made up to give kids nightmares. Well, the thing standing right in front of me was sure as hell real, though I'd still probably call it a nightmare. It reminded me of the jellyfish that sometimes washed up on Harkin's beach. But instead of being soft and translucent, this thing was hard, covered in a leathery gray skin pulled taut over its bony frame. Its head spun around in a full circle, while the legs held still, and it made a wet, mashing noise like an old man smacking on his porridge. As the back of it spun toward me, I saw where the sound was coming from. The thing had just one hole in its head, a nasty-looking round orifice framed by bristly black hairs. It suckled the air in and out like a baby's lip crying for a nipple. The old rhyme popped into my head. "Children, children, fear the cave, or a Scarling's kiss will be your grave." I'd been afraid of the mercenaries, but now I was absolutely terrified. I wanted to run, to scream, but my legs stayed planted, too scared to listen. Jax and Miles had pressed themselves against the room's walls, as far from the Scarling as possible. Only Zell stood in the middle, his sword now pointed at the creature. I don't think he had any idea what he was dealing with.
"Nobody move," Miles whispered. "Scarlings are blind and have basically no hearing, but they see with an evolved sensor in their skin that lets them detect any kinetic activity."
"Can you speak like a person?" Jax hissed. "Just this once."
Miles closed his eyes.
"We run. It strikes."
With a particularly mushy smack, the orifice in the center of the Scarling's head puckered open, drooling a yellowish gunk that sizzled against the stone. Four spindly tendrils shot out. They were thin,
transparent tubes no wider than my pinky but impossibly long, spindling out of its hole like unfurling intestines. The tendrils slid out across the floor like serpents, tapping along with glistening, jagged barbs at their ends as they searched for prey. The very tips were slick with a liquid as blue as the ocean on a clear day. Their venom. A scarling's claw might scratch you red, but its fangs prick will kill you dead. Zell was the closest. He stood firm, not moving, even as one of the tendrils probed the ground near his boot.
"I can kill it,"
he said.
"I can kill it in one strike."
"Maybe," Lyriana whispered. She looked absolutely terrified. "But can you kill those?"
She pointed up, her finger trembling, her rings burning yellow. We all looked up. There they were. At least a dozen more of them, clinging upside down to the ceiling 10 feet above us in a huddled mass. Now it was my turn to grab my mouth, silencing a scream. There was too much motion. The scarling over the well swiveled toward me with a throaty, rasping click. The ones above us had been dormant, sleeping, or whatever the hell scarlings do. But now they stirred, twitching, shoving, chittering softly among themselves. One of them, a big reddish one in the middle, started descending, its knuckles cracking as it crawled over the others. It reached the wall just between Lyriana and Miles and, with a slurping suck, opened its hole, drooling more of that steaming yellow ooze. It hit the stone between them with a sizzle, and a rank, acidic steam bubbled up.
"The scarling uses its venomous tendrils to paralyze its prey," Miles recited.
His face was white, his eyes wider than I'd ever seen them. His chest heaved with every breath.
"It immobilizes the body, and slowly dissolves it with its acidic bile, before absorbing the nutrients of the liquefied flesh."
"We have to run."
Jax eyed the door.
"We move? We're dead,"
Miles repeated.
"Well, we sure as hell can't stay."
The scarling at the center of the room, meanwhile, still had its sights set on me. Its tendrils slithered away from Zell, probing at the floors and wall around me. I sucked in my breath. Could that barb poke through my boot? It could almost certainly go through my pant leg. Above us, more and more scarlings were stirring, slowly creeping down the walls. A few let out their tendrils, and they dangled loosely down the wall like twitching, poisonous streamers. One of them touched the tip of Zell's sword and began slowly wrapping around it, the venomous barb sliding down the shaft toward his unwavering hands. The big red scarling had made its way over to Lyriana, and one of its fingertips was hooked through her hair, its dank, puckering orifice pointed right at her head. Her eyes were shut, her lips pursed, her hands clenched tightly together. The center one's tendril was now right along my foot. "And should you earn a scarling's ire, hide fast behind the fire."
Fire. Holy shit! Fire!
"I know what to do,"
I whispered. Maybe it was the insanity of desperation, or maybe I was so scared I'd somehow crossed back over into Brave. In that moment, the only thing I felt was clear, focused resolve.
"Scarlings hate fire. That's what the old rhyme says. So we're going to give them the biggest fire they've ever seen."
I turned my hand around just the tiniest bit, showing the others the sunstone Miles had given me, the one he'd turned into a bomb.
"Miles, you sure this thing will work?"
He stared at it, then nodded as he realized what I was planning.
"Yeah, it should. Just crank up the gas and break the glass." "Good. I'm going to throw this at the one in the middle, so it breaks on the edge of the well. Lyriana, I want you to grow that flame as big and tall as you can. These things should scatter like a startled flock of birds."
"And then?"
Jax asked.
"Then we run."
There was no time to discuss the plan, no time to argue over it. This was what we were doing. I tightened my grip on the sunstone and ignored the scratching of the tendril against the side of my boot. We go on three. One. Two. Lyriana screamed as the red scarling lunged forward and scraped its dirty nail along her cheek. I twisted the sunstone all the way, bathing the room in hot white light. The scarlings jerked back with a collective hiss, and then I threw it, in a perfect arc, right into the stone lining on the side of the well. It shattered explosively, glass and leather flying in all directions, and a burst of white fire blossomed out. Lyriana didn't hesitate. She shot out both hands and twisted them up, growing the tiny ball of fire into a massive pillar of white flame that shot down the well and up along the ceiling. We all jerked back from the heat. My face burned. Zell hurtled himself to the ground, the ends of his long hair sizzling. The scarlings all scattered, moving so much faster than they had before, shrieking as they scrambled up to the farthest corners of the room. "Now!" I screamed. We sprinted out the doorway and stumbled into the shaft. Zell, Miles, and I burst out first, then Jax, and then Lyriana bringing up the rear, her hands still circling as they kept the fire roaring. The shaft was bright now, between the daylight flooding in from the entryway and the white fire raging behind us. There was something in the way of the exit, though. Something on the floor at about knee height, moving and clicking. More scarlings! Two of them, it looked like, their backs turned toward us. But these seemed different. Distracted, hunched over some gooey, wet shapes on the floor and making sick, retching sounds. My stomach roiled as I realized what the shapes were. The bodies of two of the mercenaries, halfway liquefied, like people who'd been jellied and melted. They smelled horrible, vomit and blood and sickly sweet citrus. There was no time to think, just act. Behind us, the fire was dying, and the scarlings were scrambling back down. Zell raced forward, let out a rumbling war cry, and swung his sword in a low, horizontal arc. He caught one of the scarlings right in the side of the head and sliced clean through it, severing the disc from the legs and sending it flying across the room. The other scarling turned toward him with a throaty rasp, and he kicked it to the side, crushing it against the wall with the sole of his boot. Its carapace cracked like the shell of a crab, and meaty brown gunk sprayed out. The path was clear. The mine's entryway never looked more inviting. I sprinted harder than I've ever sprinted, bounding over the mercenary's gooey remains. Zell, Miles, and I hit the doorway first, bursting out into the light of the day, the warm, safe, wonderful light of day. I turned back to see Jax tearing after us, and Lyriana just behind him. Then Lyriana slipped, her foot sliding on a bloody stretch of mercenary, and she fell to her hands and knees. "Lyriana!" I yelled, but it was too late. That big red scarling lurched out from behind her, its maw puckered wide open, and four glistening tendrils shot out, aimed right at Lyriana's back. "No!" Jax roared. He spun around and dove back into the shaft, back toward the monsters chasing us. Right as the tendrils were about to strike the princess, he grabbed her up and jerked her to the side, blocking her with his body. One grazed off his shoulder, not breaking through his heavy fur coat, and the other three slashed harmlessly by, scraping off the walls. Behind them, the red scarling let out a phlegmatic, wet roar and lurched forward. But Jax dove down and grabbed something off the ground, something long and sharp with a black tip. The mercenary's arrow, straight out of his quiver. Jax thrust forward just as the scarling lunged, and he plunged the arrow right in its orifice, up to the tip with a slick crunch. The scarling gurgled and rasped, its limbs and tendrils flailing wildly, then crumpled and lay still. The two of them rushed out of the shaft, just as the rest of the scarlings dared to peer around the corner after us. They'd go no farther. Scarlings feared sunlight almost as much as they feared flame. We all staggered out into the sloping valley, gasping, panting, and laughing. I'd never felt so exhilarated in my life. "Holy shit!" Jax screamed at the top of his lungs. That was... Zell kept his calm like always, but even he was breathing a little heavy and had a smile.
"I think I found our third mercenary," Miles said.
We followed his gaze toward a body lying face down, just a few feet outside the mine's entrance. The back of his shirt was torn open, and his bare skin was marked with three round holes, the veins around them pulsing an icy blue. A bloody foam stained his gaping mouth. The Skarling's kiss.
Damn, Jack shook his head. Not that I had much love for those guys, but it's a hell of a way to go. Makes you almost feel bad for them.
I don't, Zell said.
Yeah, well, you basically don't have emotions between gotta kill and yay, I killed, so that's not really a surprise.
Jax laughed.
Still, though, that move with the sword and the kick, taking out two of them, pretty badass, Zell. Pretty badass.
You didn't do so bad yourself, Stablehand, Zell replied. It was very brave to run back for the princess. And then with the arrow.
Let's all give credit where credit's due, I grinned. We wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Miles's amazing exploding sunstone. Right, Miles? He didn't reply. Miles?
Guys?
Miles said, but his voice was all wrong. He didn't sound happy or excited. He sounded terrified. We all turned back to him, but he was staring at Lyriana, who stood bolt upright just outside the mine's entryway. There was something off about her. She looked too stiff, frozen, only her hands shaking at her sides. Tears streaked down her cheeks. Lyriana? I asked.
I'm sorry, Tilla, she replied, then crumpled down in the dirt.
Even from a distance, I could see it. Her pant leg was torn, ripped off in the chase, and there was something sticking out of the back of her left calf, a black stinger in her skin, the veins around it throbbing a haunting, unmistakable blue. Chapter 17. She's hot, I said, my hand pressed Illyriana's sweat-slick forehead. She's burning up! Her body's fighting off the venom, Miles muttered. He was sitting on a mossy log, his head resting in his hands.
Or doing the best it can.
We were in a small, damp grotto a ways off the Markson, hidden behind tall reeds and the canopy of a majestic willow tree. After Lyriana collapsed, our first priority had been to get the hell out of that valley, to find somewhere safe to regroup. Our horses had run off, and Muriel had died, poor thing. But the mercenaries' three horses were still there, so we were able to ride fast. I'd held Lyriana the whole time, pressing her between my body and her horse's neck. She'd at least been lucid for most of the ride, whispering softly that she was sorry, telling me that she felt cold, smiling weakly at my reassurances that she'd be okay. That was an hour ago. Now she lay on a bed of mossy grass in front of me, shivering and writhing, unable to even speak. Her eyes were shut tight, her mouth locked in a pained frown. Every now and again, she let out a horrible, weak whimper. And I don't know if that was better or worse than the silence. I did know one thing. I would lose my mind if Lyriana died. She deserved so much better than this. I thought of her holding that girl in the cottage, arms slick with blood, trying so hard to keep her alive, working and praying even as life left the girl's eyes. Lyriana would fight to her last breath to help a person in need. I couldn't let her die here. I wouldn't. The canopy of the willow tree parted, and Jax came in carrying a leather flask plucked from one of the mercenaries' bags.
I've got some clean water for her, like you said.
He knelt down next to me and pressed it to Lyriana's lips. They parted for just a moment, swallowing a single sip, and then she spat it all back up with a hacking gag. Jax turned away, like he didn't want me to see the pain on his face.
She's getting worse, isn't she?
Yes,
Miles said, rapidly.
Is she going to die?
I'd known Jax my whole life, but I swear I'd never heard him sound so young, so scared. Miles hesitated, but only for a moment.
I think so.
Damn it!
Jax slammed his boot into a nearby stump. I could tell it hurt him, and that he didn't care.
If I just moved a little faster, I could have gotten to her in time.
It's not your fault, Jax, I said softly. I didn't share his anger or his guilt. Looking at Lyriana, I just felt a horrible, numb ache. It was just so unfair, so wrong. This couldn't be happening. Not when we'd gone so far. Not after everything we'd been through. Not to her. How long does she have? Miles walked over to us. He crouched by Lyriana's leg and turned it over very carefully so he could see where she'd been pricked. Back at the mine, the ring of blue infection under her skin had been just an inch or so in length. It had doubled since, her veins pulsing blue halfway to her ankle and her knee.
I don't know, Miles said.
Normally, an untreated scarling sting will kill a person in 6 hours tops. But the venom usually spreads through the body much faster, like it did with the mercenary back there. She's really fighting it.
He glanced at her hands, where her rings were all glowing a vibrant green.
Maybe her magic is somehow helping her.
I thought of Archmagus Roland, still fighting even after he'd been blown up.
How long, Miles?
He sighed.
I don't know. A day, maybe? If that?
Untreated,
Zell said, and we all turned to look at him. He was standing against the base of the tree, his eyes closed. It was the first thing he'd said since we'd gotten here.
He said, an untreated sting. Does that mean there's a way to treat it? A cure?
Well, no, not a cure, but there are some medicines that can help the body slow down or even fight it off, if you can get them in time,
Miles said.
I believe the best-known antidote is a tonic of crushed embryo root, Orlesian ash, and a dilution of...
We don't need the details, Miles,
Jax interrupted.
Where do we get these things? Can we find them here?
Miles looked at him like this was the single most ridiculous idea he'd ever heard.
No, of course not. These ingredients are rare, valuable, hard to get. Orlesian ash is imported from Orles, all the way on the eastern shore. To get the kind of medicine Lyriana needs, we'd have to buy it from an apothecary.
Like in Bridgetown, I said. I almost didn't want to, because having even a glimmer of hope felt like a setup for disappointment. But I couldn't not.
They'd have it there, right?
The others turned to look at me. I could tell we were all thinking the same thing.
Well, yes,
Miles said.
Given how close Bridgetown is to so many mining communities, they'd likely have some scarling antidote.
Bridgetown is just a few hours away,
Jack said.
We could be there and back before morning.
Miles said Lyriana could last a whole day. I started walking toward the horses. If we can get her that antidote in time, she might have a shot.
What are you all talking about?
Miles cut in, obviously not on the same page at all.
Sure, Bridgetown has the antidote, and it might help Lyriana. But so what? We have no way of getting it. We're the most wanted fugitives in the whole province, remember? We can't just stroll in there, find the nearest apothecary, and buy some medicine. There'll be a city watchman on the lookout for us. Wanted posters with our faces. Maybe even soldiers from Castle Waverly. Riding in there would be suicide.
So what?
Jack spun on him.
We just let her die? Is that what you're saying?
No, of course not. But we can't throw our own lives away to save hers.
If she dies, we die, I said.
The only shot we have at getting out of this is to reunite Lyriana with the mages, remember? What do you think will happen if she dies? They'll just take us at our word?
I shook my head.
We have to try to save her. It's our only chance. I understand that. But what do you want to actually do?
Miles demanded.
We'll be arrested the moment we cross the city gates.
Will we?
Jax asked.
Because I'm not so sure.
What are you talking about? That wanted poster with our descriptions is probably hanging on every corner in the town.
I know, but...
Jax hesitated, suddenly insecure, the way he only got when he was afraid he was about to say something stupid.
Look, this has been bugging me the whole time. It might be dumb, but it's not like we have another option, right?
Jax knelt down and dug in his pack until he found the wanted poster and unfurled it on the ground.
What about it?
Miles asked skeptically.
Well, it tells people what we look like, right?
He read it aloud, slowly and choppily. Jax had never been much of a reader.
A Zatochi male, age 16, with black hair down to his shoulders. A pale-skinned male, age 16, with blonde curls framing a smooth, round face. What's your point?
Well, Jax said.
What if we just didn't look like that? You know, we cut our hair, put on an eye patch, that kind of thing. Hell, you've got a beard already, boy genius. That's half a disguise right there.
You're right, I said, and Zell nodded. Jax was onto something, and even in this tense moment, I felt a small surge of pride for him.
That could work.
Maybe, Miles said at last.
You might be right. But what are you proposing? We put on disguises, ride straight into Bridgetown, and try to buy the antidote before anyone recognizes us? That's our plan? You have a better one?
Jax replied.
Because I don't know if you've noticed, but we're kind of running out of time.
We all stared at Miles. He thought wordlessly for a while, then let out a long, deep sigh.
All right, let's do this.
This time around, we didn't have to debate who was going. Miles was obviously in, since he was the only one who had any idea what medicine we were supposed to be getting. Zell was going too. If the disguises didn't work, he was the only shot we'd have at fighting our way out. Jax, on the other hand, would have to stay back. If our little camp here got found, Lyriana would have to be with someone who could pick her up and move her in a hurry. That just left me, and without hesitating, I volunteered to go into town. I said it was because it was better to send more people, to increase the chances one of us got back with the medicine. But that was just an excuse. The truth was, I would have done absolutely anything rather than sit around and watch Lyriana die. We didn't have much in the way of disguises, but we did what we could. Zell and Miles headed into the river, where Zell shaved Miles' head with one of his daggers. With his distinctive curls gone, and that stubbly beard lining his chin, Miles looked nothing like the boy we'd set out with. He looked like a man now, and a weirdly tough man, like a guy who'd spent the last decade hung over in a gutter. Zell was next. I cut his hair, slicing off all those long black locks with his dagger. We decided to cut it short on the sides and back, a little longer on the top, but parted to the side, a look common among Western soldiers and mercenaries. As we sat together in the shallow waters at the river's edge, avoiding each other's eyes as his hair floated in the water around us, I remembered when I first saw him across the hall at the feast. How could I have possibly imagined where we'd end up? I thought he was beautiful, dangerous, but I hadn't known a thing about him, really. Did I know him now? A few wisps of hair clung to the side of his head, just above his ear, so I reached over and brushed them off, and as my fingertips grazed the soft skin, I realized my hand was trembling. What was this? Why did I feel so nervous? My breath sucked tight in my chest. It's not like we were strangers to contact. Hell, we'd spent 2 hours a day grappling in the dirt. But there was something different to this touch. Something that made my heart race. There was a tension in the air, a hunger, so thick you could taste it. Zell must have noticed, because he glanced back over his shoulder. With his hair cut so short, his eyes were even more striking. But there was something new in them, a vulnerability, a hint at a tenderness inside him that I was just beginning to see. It scared me. Here, I said, handing him back the dagger. It's a little better than the last time I cut someone's hair, but that was when I was 7 and ended up nearly shaving Jax bald. It was a joke, a dumb one, to try to break that tension. It failed. Something had changed. Something I didn't have the time or emotional energy to fully consider right now. Then it was my turn to get disguised. I couldn't just cut off my hair without drawing more attention. But Zell had an idea. He got a small leather kit out of one of the mercenaries' packs and opened it, revealing a half-dozen vials full of multicolored powders. He mixed them together in the water, the reds and blues and yellow, swirling like magic around his fingertips. And then, very gently, rubbed it on my face, squinting the whole time, like a painter working on a masterpiece. I had no idea what he was doing, and I was kind of afraid I'd come out looking like a clown from a vagabond troupe. But his touch was soft and delicate, and that made me trust him. In the waning pink light, he ran his fingertips along my face, and the night glass shards on his knuckles sparkled like stars. It was hard to believe these were the same hands that killed so readily. Then he finished, slapping his palms together with satisfaction, and I took a look at my reflection. I didn't know how he'd done it, but Zell had worked a miracle. He'd added thin black lines like wrinkles that aged me a good decade and made my normally thin eyebrows dark and full. He'd reddened my lips, filled out the bags under my eyes, and given me a distinctive mole on my right cheek. "Wow," I said. "Good work. I look totally gross."
"You're welcome," Zell replied sincerely. "I think this might be some of my finest work."
"Do I even want to know where you learned how to do this?"
"My mother was a Zamtaran. How do I say this? Your closest word is actress. But she was much more than that. At every feast, there would be plays telling of our clan's history, going back to the era of legends, when men and gods lived as one. My mother led these plays and performed the most important parts. She had to know how to change her face to look like Kelsa, the Great Mother, or Rikura, the Crone Queen of the Underworld."
He got that distant look on his face again, the one where he looked peaceful and lost. "You and your mother are close?" Zell seemed like such an outsider that it hadn't even occurred to me that he had loved ones left back among his clan. It made me feel that much worse about him running off with us. Zell nodded.
"As the elder, Raz was always my father's favorite. He was his spitting image, aggressive, loud, full of boasts. My father didn't share his cruelty, but Raz could always hide it when he was around. I am much more like my mother. It is seen as unbecoming, weak, for Zitochi men to be quiet, to hide their passions. But I always preferred it, and so does she."
He sighed, a tiny little smile on his face, and looked down at his dye-stained hands.
"When I was little, she taught me the art of face painting. It was a game for us, seeing how different we could make ourselves look. I always wanted to be a Zentaren, but of course, only women were allowed."
I cocked my head to the side. "I'm starting to realize there's a lot I don't know about Satoshi." Zell nodded.
"I've known that for some time."
We made our way back to the willow tree. Jax was kneeling by Liriana's side, holding a damp cloth to her forehead, and he looked up as we approached.
"Wow,"
he said.
"Miles looks like a deranged hermit. Tilla looks like a middle-aged spinster. And Zell looks like, well, Zell with a haircut."
Zell let out a tiny sigh.
"I was worried about that."
Liriana arched up and let out a horrific, gasping cough, one that sounded like it scraped all the way up from her diaphragm, taking most of her lungs on the way. Jax held her until her hacking died down.
"It's okay,"
he whispered.
"It's okay, it's okay, it's okay."
Then he wiped his hand along her chin, and when he turned it over, the back of it was stained red.
"Oh, shit,"
he muttered, and he looked like he'd never tell another joke in his life.
"You guys gotta go. You gotta go now."
Miles and Zell took off, leaving me alone with Jax. He sat there on the ground, Liriana sprawled across his lap, and his hand shook just a tiny bit as he pressed the damp cloth to her head. I'd seen him sad, and I'd seen him angry, but I'd never seen him like this before, so tender and nurturing. "Jax," I struggled to find the words. This isn't your fault. It really isn't. He shook his head.
You can say that, Tilla. Doesn't make it true.
He gently ran the cloth along Lyriana's cheek. She shivered.
I gave her so much shit. So much shit. And for what? To get a laugh?
He let out a long exhale.
If she dies...
She won't. I knelt down, wrapped my arm around his big shoulders, and gave him a hug. For a moment, I saw the gravity of the situation, like glimpsing a huge shadow under you when you're swimming. This might well be the last time I hugged my brother, the last time I talked to him, the last time we ever saw each other. This could be the end. I blinked the thought away. I didn't have time for it. I love you, big brother, I said, and pressed my forehead to his. He closed his eyes and hugged me back. We'll get through this. We'll save her.
We'd better.
Chapter 18.
So, I've been thinking about our cover story, Miles said, maybe 10 minutes after we rode out from the camp.
Our what? I asked. We were still in the woods, trotting our horses through increasingly thin undergrowth as we made our way toward a main road. Walking the slow felt wasteful. I wanted to gallop toward Bridgetown. But of course that would draw attention, especially this early in the day and this close to civilization. So instead we trotted along, edging forward while Lyriana lay dying back under that willow tree.
Our cover story, Miles repeated. I mean, what are we going to say if anyone asks who we are or why we're in town? We'll need to be able to say something believable.
I glanced at Zell and he shrugged. We don't need to make up something fancy, Miles, I said. Why can't we just be 3 friends traveling together?
Because we're buying Scarling antidote,
Miles replied, as if this were incredibly obvious, which, okay, maybe it was.
That's not exactly a common purchase. It's going to raise questions. Questions we need to be ready to answer.
Fine. It sounds like you've already got something planned out. Miles nodded.
I've been thinking about it, yes. What do you think of this? Tilla, you and I are newlyweds from Malbrick, a small town just outside Port Hamel.
We're what now?
Newlyweds,
Miles repeated. And could he actually be oblivious to why that was weird?
Our families are well off, though not wealthy. Yours runs the local inn, while mine provides protection to merchants traveling around the north. As the second son, I find myself trapped in the shadow of my successful brother, desperate to prove myself, especially to my father before his ailing health fails him.
How long have you been thinking about this?
Zell asked.
And how does it actually help us get the antidote?
I'm getting there, Miles grumbled. As a wedding present, a distant uncle of mine gifted me several acres of land up in the northwest, past the Morning Lakes, but just shy of the borderlands. This is barren frostland, unfarmable, mostly worthless. Except my uncle swears up and down that the hills there are rich with gold, just waiting to be mined. While most think it's a fool's errand, I'm convinced there's truth in his words. So I'm setting out, along with my new wife, to inspect the territory for myself. And given that we'll likely be venturing into caves and scouting for mines...
You'll want the antidote on hand, just to be safe.
Zell nodded.
Clever. But how do I fit in?
You are the Zatochi bodyguard and guide we've hired to show us the way,
Miles exclaimed.
After all, who would know the land better?
Zell nodded again, and actually seemed a little impressed. I had to admit, it wasn't a bad cover story, but part of it didn't sit right with me. It's not hard to guess which.
Do we have to be newlyweds? I asked.
I mean, can't we be siblings?
Zell shook his head.
That's harder to believe. You look nothing alike.
Thanks, Zell.
Plus, we lose the whole element of the wedding gift, which the story hinges on,
Miles complained.
I've thought about this a lot. This is the story that makes the most sense.
Yeah, but it just seems weird.
What's weird about it?
Zell asked. I tried to think of a way to answer his question without just telling him the whole truth, and came up with nothing. Miles guided his horse toward mine ever so slightly, and my gaze met his. I could tell that we were both thinking the same thing, wanting to address the issues hanging in the air, the tension we'd been avoiding ever since his ill-advised confession. I kind of hated him for bringing it up like this. Then I glanced at Zell, at the grave look on his face, and I thought of Lyriana back there in the grove, shivering and trembling in Jax's arms. I saw it again, the sheer gravity of the moment, the shadow lurking beneath the water. The entire kingdom was at stake, but more than that, my friend's life was at stake. Was I seriously going to make a big deal out of some stupid fake identity? No, it's fine, I sighed. I'm just being prickly. I'll go with it. I'll be, pretend to be, Miles's wife. Miles nodded, and at least he didn't seem overly happy about it. We'll need fake names, easy ones that we can remember. I'll be Anders Tonnen. Muriel, I said. Muriel Tonnen.
Zen,
Zell said. Miles and I both turned to him. That's a little obvious, isn't it?
It's a common Zitochi name.
He shrugged and didn't seem interested in discussing it any further. An hour of silent riding later, we emerged out into the wide dirt road that led into Bridgetown, its bright lights visible through the night even this far away. At first, it felt deeply wrong to be here. We'd spent so much effort avoiding main roads that riding on one now seemed horribly exposed, like walking into a great feast naked. As we trotted side by side down the road, I held my breath, and when we came upon our first fellow travelers, an ox-drawn wagon laden down with golden Heartlander grain, I felt my heart start to race. But then, the husky, bearded man driving the wagon didn't even look up as we passed him, and neither did the young couple walking on the side of the road, or the old man riding on the back of a fly-mottled donkey. No one noticed. No one cared. I shot Miles a confused look, and he threw back a shrug. When we'd set out from the grove, I'd worried this was a suicide mission, that Jax was wrong about the poster, that we'd be recognized immediately, and we were throwing our lives away. But now, I couldn't help but wonder if we'd been wrong about the risk all along. Were our disguises that good? Or did we not even need them? The lights of Bridgetown grew brighter and brighter, and soon we were coming up on the town itself. I could make out the rickety buildings of East Bridgetown, densely clustered wooden houses with cracked roofs and peeling paint. The story went that Bridgetown had once been two completely different villages, one on each side of the Markson, connected by a single long wooden bridge. Then another bridge had been added, and another, and soon an entire mile-long stretch of river had been built over, and the two towns had become one, with a sprawling night market, the biggest in the West, set up on the bridges in the middle. I still remembered it so clearly from when I was a little girl. Rows and rows of stands that went on forever, packed tight on the elevated wooden platforms, open all night under the flickering light of hundreds of mounted torches. I remember the noisy shouts of the vendors, the smells of fruit and spice and roasting meat, the barely audible river rushing underneath. I remembered my father's firm hand holding mine as he guided me along. We wouldn't be going to the market tonight, of course. It would be too risky to go somewhere that crowded. All we needed to do was ride into the common quarter of East Bridgetown, basically a slum. Find the first apothecary we could, buy the antidote, and bail before anyone had a chance at identifying us. Still, as we got closer and closer to the entrance, I could hear the sounds of the market's commotion, distant voices shouting and the faintest notes of music. I felt a sudden, unexpected pang of sadness. I'd always planned on coming back to Bridgetown's night market as an adult, trying on dresses and sampling wines and dancing with some fancy mask on. No matter how tonight went, I was pretty sure that was never going to happen. If we'd gone in through the nicer, richer West Bridgetown, we'd have ridden in through a big fancy gate, and probably had to pass an inspection by the city watch. But in East Bridgetown, we just rode right in, the trees at our sides replaced with crumbling houses, the dirt underfoot by chipped paving stone. From a distance, it looked like any of the poorer villages near Castle Waverly. But once inside, it was stranger, more cluttered, more foreign. If West Bridgetown was where merchants from all over the kingdom came to sell their goods, East Bridgetown was where they ended up when they went broke. I passed a tavern with four flags hanging over the door, one for each of the provinces, and the drunks inside were dancing to some strange, warbly instrument I'd never heard before. Nearby, just past a pen of squealing pigs, lay a drunk from the Southlands, his head bald, his skin bronze, one chubby hand resting on a strange animal that looked like a lanky gray dog in a bristly shell. A Westerner, a Heartlander, and a Zatoche huddled together in an alley, smoking grief weed as they rolled nine-sided devil's dice. The air smelled like sweat and beer and the unmistakable tang of piss. Next to me, Zell shifted on his horse uncomfortably. Only city watchmen were allowed to openly wear weapons in Bridgetown, so Zell had left his sword back at the camp and hidden a pair of daggers under his cloak. He looked around with what I think was curiosity, like he was trying to drink it all in with his eyes. "It's not all like this," I explained to him, weirdly apologetic. "There are nice parts."
"It reminds me of the steps in Zell Corso," Zell replied, and he actually seemed kind of wistful. "Drinking, gambling, feasting."
"Not to mention whoring," Miles muttered, his gaze stuck on a nearby brothel. Or, more specifically, on the topless women leaning out its upper windows. "Hey! We're married, remember? There'll be no whoring on my watch," I said. And okay, yes, it was kind of funny. "Now, hurry up and find us that apothecary, husband." It took Miles a minute, but he spotted one. A squat one-story building with a pole out front, painted white and green, the colors of a mayberry leaf, the universal symbol for healing. We tied our horses to a hitch outside and walked toward its closed wooden door. I was worried no one was there, but then I saw some faint candlelight through the shuttered window and a hint of movement. Which, of course, made me start to panic. We weren't just riding alongside people anymore. We were going to speak to them.
"I'll do the talking,"
Miles whispered urgently, obviously feeling the same stress. "We'll just go in, get the antidote, and get out. Don't say anything unless you have to."
"Wasn't planning on it," Zell replied.
"Well, good then." Miles reached the door first, then hesitated and took a deep breath. "No way out. No other choice. Is there?"
"No, there isn't. Let's do it."
He threw open the door and we stepped in. The only apothecary I'd been to before was the one in Millerton, which was clean and nicely organized, like the pantry at Castle Waverly. This one was the exact opposite of that. Massive shelves sat behind a cluttered counter, and they were messy with loose herbs, vials, and bags of powders. Yellowed books and crumpled papers littered every single surface. The whole room was lit by a single candelabra on the counter, and there was no sign of an owner, save for some shuffling noises coming from a closed door behind the counter.
"You sure this place will have what we need?" I asked.
"It wouldn't be my first choice."
Miles picked a heavy tome off the floor and turned it over in his hands.
"But beggars, choosers, all that?"
"All that indeed,"
a dry-accented voice replied. The door behind the counter swung open, and a stocky, older man hobbled in, reeking of sweat and cheap booze. He was wearing a rumpled tunic that hung too tight around his heavy gut, and his thinning gray hair had the tips dyed gold. He wore makeup, but strangely with thick purple shadows under his eyes and his lips painted bright orange.
"My name is Timofey Loren Kelvin Koren,
and I hail from Methusia, the greatest and the most wondrous of all the eastern baronies, he said. Apothecary, scholar, and right now, a man who'd hoped to shut down his shop for the night. Let's make this quick, shall we? What can I do for you?
Miles cleared his throat and stepped forward.